My name is Jill McAlpine and my company is In Purpose.
Well, I'm delighted to welcome Jill McAlpine from In Purpose here today for this Growth for Good podcast. Jill, welcome.
Thank you for having me, Drew. Such a treat.
<Isn't it? laughs> Jill, everybody loves us. Jill, you've started a new company.
Yes.
And you've been going for a few months. I think things have started really well from what I hear from other people.
Yeah.
Tell us a bit about what you're doing. What is In Purpose?
Yeah, so really what I wanted to do was set up a business that kind of solves some of the problems that I've recognized through the years working in business, working in politics, working in projects, and actually really try and focus on, I love small businesses. You know, I think small businesses are the backbone of our economy. And so what In Purpose really does is, I guess it's a kind of business optimization agency. Because what we do is we work with founders who are, well, through their own excellence, usually have grown amazing businesses. And their problem usually isn't that they've got no clients. It's trying to get their business optimized for the next stage of their growth. And really, that's what we're about at In Purpose, pulling together their strategy, their team development, and their systems and processes, and working with them to get that all optimized.
And what is that about small businesses you love?
I absolutely believe they're the backbone of the Scottish economy anyway. Mm-hmm. We live in the Highlands, mm-hmm. An area that has so much entrepreneurial spirit. I can't remember the statistics around it, but there's some great statistics about the levels of entrepreneurship in the Highlands. But also, there's something about just helping those really talented individuals create a bit more freedom for their business. You know, we've talked before about like the freedom of time. It's something that's really important to me. And I believe like just by tweaking, like working with somebody like me who will work with you to optimize your business system, really get your team working in an excellent way, and linking that all to strategy can help those leaders who are great for our economy because they're growing all the time, get to the next stage of their business growth.
And what can scaling up do for these businesses? I mean, it sounds pretty obvious that you're going to scale up, you get more business, but that doesn't necessarily mean things are going to be great. So what is being organized and scaling up in the way that you're talking about?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Well, it's more than being organized. It's creating like a real business operating model. For me, one of the big aims is to build better workplaces for people. So I believe if we help small businesses become better, then their teams become better off. Do you know what I mean? Their teams are secure employment. If an employer isn't stressed all the time, then they're able to invest into their people. They're able to invest into growth. And we touched on it already. They're the backbone of our economy.
So being the backbone of our economy, why, in your view, is it important that, you know, the businesses actually take the steps to look at what they can do in the way that you're trying to
see what you mean? So I for most people, what got them there won't get them to the next stage, and I think that's the reality. And quite a lot of businesses are at breaking point when they start to reach that stage where they're growing and they're looking to diversify their business, but their systems are just starting to creak, their team is a little bit, I guess, misaligned with everything. And quite often what happens is they end up doing less strategic work, whereas you would think when you're in a growth, you know, sort of period, you would be doing more strategic work. But because people are so in the operation and doing great work, because they quite often, Drew, the problem that I see with my clients isn't like that they're making money, right? They're making money and they have the potential to go out and make more money for themselves, for their teams, and for the economy. So,
and what pressures does that ease?
Well, time is a big thing for them. I think that, and you'll experience this as having been a founder yourself, we're always time poor. And it's one of the things that I see time and time again for, how many times can we say? Time and time again with clients is they just don't have the time to give, you know, the next phase of their business the thought that it requires. So I think time, giving people back time.
And that giving back time means that people can do some things that are healthier for them in terms of both their business, both their staff and indeed their
own lives. And there's all that great stuff, but at the end of the day, that time also equals a better bottom line. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, it's all right for everybody to sit and talk about what you should be doing for the good of the economy and for the good of your team. And that is all important. But actually, by doing more work on optimizing your business, you start making better inroads into protecting that bottom line. And that's really important now, Drew, for the way that the economy is, you know.
So what do you mean when you say about optimizing your business? And I know you're, you know, I don't want you to necessarily feel you're having to repeat yourself, but let's just get down to some of the nitty-gritty about the kinds of things that InPurpose would do. And what you, how you would help businesses in that way.
So there's three main areas that we focus on this, the strategy, processes and systems, and team development. So first of all, I would sit down with a business leader to really understand where they're trying to go, you know, and even just having that conversation is so enlightening and so exciting because I get to like hear all their plans and love it. And that really helps me better understand the journey that they need to go on. And then the other part of that would be is looking at the systems and processes to see if they mirror that strategy. And quite often that's where there's the disconnect because systems and processes might be a bit outdated, might not be maximizing the time that can be spent on growth activities. You know, so, you know, if you want to grow your client list, yet your team members are sitting, you know, doing lots of admin work per se, then that's not going to, you're just going to really struggle to make the payroll, you know, like work for that. So that's a really good example of how you can make a change. And simple changes can just save time, which saves money. And then you can choose to either take those savings or put that time that you've saved into more growth opportunities.
I just want to investigate a little bit further with you some of the mechanics of that, because I think people listening will be going, I can do this. I can look at my business myself.
For sure.
Without perhaps appreciating that actually one of the hardest things to do is to look at your business when you're inside
it. So it's such a good point. And, you know, one of the things that I always, it's part of the conversation I always have with clients, like, actually, if you were looking inside my business, you'd probably be saying, this is what you could be doing, this is what you could be doing. Because it's the crucial point is what you pointed out. It's somebody looking in from the outside and being able to take a 360-degree look at your business. Now, I always think back to when I ran hotels, and I was really lucky because when I first went into a general management position, the previous general manager, who was my mentor as well, had already started the hotel through the process of Hospitality Assured. I don't know if you know the program. Anyway, and I worked with a consultant through that process of looking at the business with 360 degrees. And I think that that's what this offers, you know, it just offers that somebody from the outside helping you, guiding, I guess, because you know your business better than anyone, but guiding and shaping what that plan for change is going to look like.
Sometimes I imagine that would mean a bit of confirmation of things that you're doing that
are
fine.
So many times,
But other times it's about a light bulb going off and going, wait a minute, we've got something wrong here.
So many times I'll be sitting in a meeting and I'll be like so excited at the like great work because I'll be like, oh my gosh, what you're doing there is absolutely brilliant, you know? Yeah. So it's not about going in and pointing the finger. And you know, actually what I find is the people that come and work with me are the kind of people who want you to come in and find things wrong, you know? Yeah. And so often the case is there isn't.
But this is also about opportunity realization as well.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So if you're going in and you're saying, look, this process can be improved, it might actually be a massive opportunity for a business to do something to maybe make a series of small steps and radically change their outcomes.
Yeah, absolutely. And if we go back to time, first of all, finding the capacity, because obviously saving time through process development or like just playbooking an operation, you know, getting everything, you will not like the power of just documenting all your processes because your team will automatically see. And even actually, if listeners can even take that away, you don't need to get a consultant to do that, right? A consultant can help you do that to a better degree and to a better quality. But even if you could just get your team playbooking, like writing down and documenting all your processes, they will see where there's leakage, where there's perhaps ways that they could do things differently. I always remember there was this one time, it's when I worked in the public sector, and I went into a team and said, oh, what's all the these shelves of paper for all these folders. I worked in a business improvement project. And they told me, oh, it's because we need to print them for the system. And actually, the system had changed 2 years ago. And when I drilled down, realized that they'd just been printing, that member of staff was trying to do a great job, right? Mm. But actually, nobody had gone and reviewed the processes so that that information was still being printed. It was taking up, you know, valuable space, but also valuable time as well. Now, it might not be as extreme as that as in a smaller business, but there are opportunities to refine and develop processes. And quite often, like people within the business, especially with smaller businesses, they don't have the capacity to do that because they're so busy, you know, working. Whereas in a larger organization, you know, they have a business change manager in place.
Yeah, is one of the opportunities to break people out of habitual patterns.
Yeah.
Because you were talking there about something that had always been done and
yeah.
never been updated. But I imagine there's a lot of habit.
Sure.
And
that's very much the model that I use is like I work alongside businesses for like, well, you know, 3 to 6 months mm-hmm. because coming and giving you a report about how you can fix your operation is not what you need. Like, you kind of know that anyway. Yes, there might be some elements of your team development or your strategy or your process development that you didn't think about before. We talked about that, someone coming in from the outside and looking in. But in fact, the hardest part of it's change. Like, it's managing change, isn't it? It's tough and it's painful and it's uncomfortable. Like, you and I have both gone through, like, throughout our careers where we've had to manage change and it's difficult. And so if I think that's maybe the most value that I bring to, you know, or we do it in purpose bring is that kind of helping people through that execution because we actually understand what that's like. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not easy. Like, I sometimes when I'm with clients, I'll be like, you don't have to apologize for not having followed through on something. I get it. Like, you've been busy making money. But let's reset and figure out what the plan is.
You talked about your career and history there.
Yeah.
Don't want you to go down that directly, but tell us about you.
Yeah.
What is it that drives you? You talked about your love of small businesses and the importance yeah. of them and so forth. But what is it that drives you personally? What are the things that get you going?
Yeah, I always think I love... Well, how to answer this? It's almost difficult, isn't it? Mm. I try to look at ways that I can help people from the lessons that I've learned. And so throughout my career, like, I've burnt out. Do you know what I mean? Well, not quite burnt out, but worked at a pace that, you know, would cause burnout. You yeah. know, I was very lucky I didn't, but, you know, and I think that, so then when I was looking at what I wanted to do, I wanted to try and help people, prevent people from, like, having that situation. And also the workplace. Like, I'm really passionate about building excellence. You know, I'm always in the pursuit of excellence in, like, what I do and also any teams that I lead. And I believe that we can build excellent workplaces, which will then help businesses become more profitable. I don't believe it's an either or. And so if I can help people do that,
And where do you talked about, you know, workplace burnout and so forth, but I think I think anybody who would know you knows that you're kind of built on enthusiasm and drive and all of those things. You've had to help people in the past where there's been situations where they've had either personal crises had to deal with, or, you know, they've had issues that have impacted on the workplace, or the workplace has had issues that has impacted on the person. Tell us about the approach to dealing with, you know, for example, one of those things might be neurodiversity. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So, as you know, it's a subject close to my heart. I am somebody who has an ADHD brain. I've led... Well, I think everybody has. Everybody's led neurodiverse teams, whether they know it or not, but I've been aware that I've led neurodiverse teams as a neurodiverse person. So, yeah, that's really important to me. But I also find it really important to speak about neurodiversity in the workplace and that inclusivity that you're talking about, because it makes me feel really uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Like, when I talk about my ADHD and in my professional life, I find that really difficult to do because I don't want you to think that I, like, I'm incapable.
Have an issue.
Have an issue, yeah. Right? Yeah. And so that's really challenging to get you around, especially, like, you know, I run a business. I don't want people to go, oh, well, you know,
and yet, ADHD. And yet, correct me if I'm wrong, people are actually seeking you out to speak about this.
And for sure.
But, because it is important that it's a factor.
This is the point.
Business.
I find it uncomfortable, which is why I do that. And why I do it is because I believe we actually can build people-centered workplaces. We flip the conversation on neurodiversity and talk about how do we make our teams more productive, how do we make them more efficient, how do we get excellence. I think that's the conversation I prefer to start from.
And just following on from that conversation, because I think it's important. You know, I personally, as you know some of the way you've worked in the past and so forth. When you're talking about making workplaces suitable for people with neurodiversity to work in, it's not about reducing the effectiveness of that organization.
No,
in fact,
sure.
Quite the opposite. It's about increasing the effectiveness of the operation by making sure that the right things, the right choices.
Yeah, 100%. And when as you've said, you know, I present, I go out, I will speak to anybody about neurodiversity, and I'm very lucky that people have reached out for me to speak about these things. Is that flipping the conversation? We can change the way that we think about neurodiversity in the workplace. I always try to be careful when I'm talking about this because I think it is important to caveat it. You know, as touched on before, you know, I find it uncomfortable. So that's why I speak about it, because I think, you know, I am somebody who's had a successful career, managed to find strategies to manage my neurodiversity and neurodivergence. That isn't the case for everyone. Not everyone can go, well, this is how I plan my work. You know, not everybody has the opportunity to manage their work in that way, or perhaps don't work in an environment where employers like will take the time to understand that. So the caveat is it's not easy for everyone. So I don't want to, you know, sometimes it can be like, oh, like neurodivergence is a superpower. And to me it is, but it is also very debilitating. And for some other people, it's more debilitating. So I just wanted to put that caveat
in. I think it's absolutely correct. You shouldn't. It's perhaps the subject of a completely different podcast, which would take quite a long time.
But to come back
to come
your...
back.
I went in a big... Because it is important to recognise that. But to come back then, I absolutely do believe us like having a people-centred approach to the workplace changes the conversation on neurodivergence, because we're having a conversation about how do we get the best out of our people to make the place more productive.
Yeah, and getting the best out of people is really about leadership.
100, yeah.
And, you know, you've been talking about choices that businesses can make that you would help them to assess and look at and, you know, perhaps give them options to look at it. Tell me about leadership. What that means and how you can help in that arena.
Yeah, so getting to understand, listen, look, people have their own leadership styles. I think that's the first point. So when I'm working with a client, there's obviously ways that I think they can get better out of their team, but there's also lots of things I learn from clients as well. The first thing I would say is it's about you as a leader. So the kind of leader you are, Drew, will be very different than the kind of leader I am. So I work with the person in front of me. Don't try and say, well, this is how you should lead. And I think that's really important.
So it's not prescriptive or threatening or anything like that.
It can be. Yeah. You know, I had this conversation with a client last week who'd been like, you know, if you've done it that way all this time, you know, you're not going to be able to flip that like
so
full circle.
Is your view of leadership about working within your strengths?
Yes.
Right.
So we are all imperfect.
Yeah.
So we have to figure out who we are and how we are going to get the best out of people. And sometimes, Drew, that is find somebody else in your team to do the lead bit. And, you know, there's this big gap between management and leadership. Not everybody is a leader in the word of leader. So taking time to understand who you are, I think, is really, really important. And
so there, are you talking there about leadership through empowerment?
Yes, 100%. I believe that at the heart of leadership is creating leaders. You know, so if you think about somebody, if you treat a member of your staff as a task person, then you're going to get a task person. But what's to say that person who's in charge of that process? I don't know, give me an example of a process. I know, invoicing, yeah. Right? So invoicing is pretty important for your business.
It'd probably be my least favorite thing
yeah,
to do if
too.
It were me. Yeah,
me too, right? Yeah. But would you, like, what you can do is you can choose that part to have a culture where that person knows that they are the leader in their domain, or you can choose to treat them like a task owner, and then they'll always ask you what needs to be done next and everything else. Now, you and I have talked about this before. What has to come with that kind of style of leadership is also like an acceptance of failure. And because if you are going to, or forgiveness, if you're going to let people have more autonomy over their roles, where, by the way, they have the most information, that person has the most information about that invoicing process. So why would they not be the leader around that? If you've also given them the tools to do that and a clear escalation path as well. I think I went away in a tangent there.
No, you didn't. And it's a really interesting place to be, because I would imagine there are many businesses who are successful in their to the level that they've got to just now, who would be really interested in doing that. But the business owner, the founder, the person in charge or whatever might feel, oh, I don't want to bring somebody in who's going to tell me I've been getting it wrong for years, I feel threatened about that. You know, what would you say to somebody who's saying, well, I've got these emotions, I think there's something there, but really, really, I
why
don't want to go
you,
through.
Though? Like, why would you feel like
because
that?
Because people are emotional,
like,
aren't they?
Yeah. No, but I'm agreeing with you. Yeah, I'm like, I would feel like that, wouldn't you?
Yes, indeed.
I would, you know, it's like nobody wants you to see it, like, you know, like your Monica cupboard, right? You don't want anybody opening your Monica cupboard. And that's why it's got to be done with, like, you know, I've businesses, you know, I've like run teams. It's like I understand like what that feels like, what that looks like, and none of us are perfect. I certainly so if somebody was like, I understand, like that's difficult, that's a really big hurdle to get over. But honestly, if they can't get over that hurdle, then they shouldn't work with someone like me, because they won't actually feel the benefit.
They will know, and I know this from you, they will know that they've got somebody who treat their business with respect, confidentiality,
100%.
All of those things that say, look, it's you know, there may be things here, opportunities that I've not been able to explore so far. Yes, there might be some things going wrong, but if I allow somebody like Jill to come in and in purpose to do the kind of audit that needs to be done in my business, then I'll get the opportunity to make choices, I presume.
Yeah.
You know, because it's not prescriptive, as you said earlier. Choices.
It's all about the individual, you know. And the, you know, I've been looking for a term for it for such a long time. And then I was reading this Forbes article, and it's called fractional leadership. Have you heard of the term?
I've heard of it, but tell us about it. Tell us
so,
what it means.
So alongside the kind of business optimization stuff that I do, I also like work with people on that strategic leadership level, you know, to try and help them find that like direction in their business. And fractional leadership is where, and a lot more companies are turning to it, because obviously we understand what the economy is like, and we all want the best bang for our buck, of like pulling in like executive level experts, like part-time, do you know, but not as an employee. So for instance, like I provide strategic leadership to certain businesses, and they get a bit of my time. But they're not paying for like a full-time exec. They're getting the right expertise they need at the right moment. And there's more and more businesses, I'm not saying necessarily here, but I hope that will happen, but more and more businesses are moving to that model where they're buying in the expertise that they need.
But let's talk for a minute about you starting a business, starting a business in the Highlands. What are the pluses and minuses of doing that for people who might be, you know, just started a business themselves who are listening, or people are thinking about it, or people are going, can I do it here? What are your thoughts on that?
Do you know, I mean, definitely in the Highlands, one of the things I found is it just, there's so many great people, you know. I hate networking, as you know. I'm dreadful at it. Like, well, I should stop saying that. I'm not dreadful at it.
You're not dreadful at it. And people,
you
should,
know what?
People should know that you may feel dreadful at it, but you're actually very good at it. I think that's
people in the Highlands
fact.
Don't let you hate it because they just are so sweet and so nice and everyone's so supportive. And, you know, there's, again, we talked at the start about there being high levels of entrepreneurial spirit in the Highlands. And you see that played out. Mm. There's so many other local businesses and so many people you can collaborate with. Like, almost too many. I'm like, oh gosh, there's definitely not too many, but you know, I just want to work with everyone because there's just so much talent.
There's pockets of excellence everywhere.
Pockets of excellence everywhere. Yeah. So yes, that has so definitely starting a business in the Highlands is great. I think the hardest thing I found about like starting a business is lack of, even though I'm saying that, it's a lack of day-to-day connection. You know, when you go from like, you know, like working in an environment where you like have a team or like lots of people around you, and not even necessarily around you because I work from home, but that day-to-day connection like is a bit of an adjustment because it's quite different.
But surely that for like other businesses that would inspire you to go and get as many clients as you possibly can, so you're out working with them just like. But I suppose one of the other things that people would do is strategies, and I know this is something I've done in the past, I would imagine you've done it, you'll go and use coffee shops and meet people in different places,
But the other thing as well, Drew, but, you know, I'll add to that bit, is that people are just so giving of their time. Like, you know, you can just ask people like for advice and support and, you know, just to share their knowledge. People are so giving of their time. And you're right, the amount of time as well, you know, you and I both use like places like the Creative Academy and such like. So yeah, there's loads of different places you can go.
Indeed. So you talked about people giving their time. One of the things I think is really interesting is to see that the fact that there are so many pockets of excellence. It's quite a lot of consultancies in the Highlands, but quite a lot of them are doing different things.
Yeah.
It's quite a friendly community, isn't it?
Yeah, the amount of people that I spend time with and share ideas with who on paper, like there's quite a bit of crossover or they'd be considered your competitors. And I just think that's a mindset. You know, I don't want to go through business life looking at people and thinking, well, I'm not sharing with you because you might feel, so what? You know, that's, I'd much rather collaborate with people. So yes, collaboration over competition for me. But again, I think that's the Highland community, isn't it? I've had so many people that, again, are really like close to me in terms of what my offering, actually put business on the table for me. So.
And what are the next steps for you, Joe? Where is Impurpose going to next? You've obviously started your business quite recently. You've got a number of clients now who have heard about your services, have engaged you to do work like this.
Yeah.
They're seeing the benefits. But, you know, you're going to get to that place where you're going to have to do your own audit, aren't you?
So, yeah, exactly. Yeah. I got to practice what I preached to. Because remember that freedom of time. So, yeah, very much practicing what I preach. And I've got, like, you know, ideas around that. I always knew the kind of business I wanted to create was around freedom. So,
And that means collaboration?
Collaboration, for sure. Like, I built the foundations on that being more collaborative. So where to start with, you know, I envisage myself doing a lot of the, you know, the work with businesses. But actually now I just like want to pull in other experts, you know, where, because again, things will get done quicker and they're better for my
clients. And your experience and reach, I would imagine, means that you've got some really high quality people in terms of being able to deliver for business. You've got some really high quality connections.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, and there's just so much talent in the Highlands. And again, I started a business here because I knew the talent that was here. But wow, like every time I sit down and speak to someone, I'm just like in awe of the talent that is out there. And, you know, so many different, you know, you and I are, we'll see a problem and we try and come up with a solution. And I'm like, all right, I'll come up with this solution or this bit of software for that. And then honestly, the next day I'll meet someone who literally supplies that bit of software who's like in another office in Brest, you know. You think you don't need to actually go out and recreate stuff. I'm in awe of all the talent in the Highlands.
That's fantastic. Jill, it's been a pleasure talking with you on this Growth podcast. I know you've been a supporter from the start. Some people might think that's just because we're friendly, but I know it's because of what you've said here today, that you believe in this place and you believe in people in this place. And that's why you've been behind that and you've contributed articles. I know for a fact what you're doing will really help people. So thanks for coming along and chatting to us on the podcast. Me. And good luck with the future.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. So if you want to listen to more Growth for Good podcasts, you can get them on the usual places, Apple, Spotify, and of course at the website, drewhendry.scot. Thank you for listening.